Right, so Labour's crackdown on Palestine action has just run into a jury-shaped obstacle at the Old Bailey. 8 weeks in court, 37 hours of deliberation, one conviction, but no verdicts against seven supposed organisers. And this has happened while Labour's broader ban on Palestine action has led to a prosecution backlog so large that 1,579 Section 13 cases have had to be managed through a single Westminster review. And Labour somehow, without a single trace of irony, claims they had to do this because, well, the court simply can't cope with the workload anymore. And so apparently what we now have is a situation where once Palestine action had been prescribed and publicly supporting it had become a criminal offence, and so police and prosecutors say they are obviously just enforcing the law the Parliament passed, and yet separately, Labour argues jury reform is needed because the current backlog is leaving victims and defendants waiting too long for justice. Okay. Fine, but maybe someone should ask why Labour keeps filling the courts with terrorism cases, therefore, featuring protesters and pensioners and the occasional threatening placard, as if the real danger to Britain here is a grandmother with a marker pen filling courts up of too many cases that they can't cope with and at the same time making juries the problem when juries are the ones refusing to convict the supposed terrorists who come in their 60s, 70s and 80s. Anybody would think they've got an ulterior motive here, wouldn't you?
Draconian laws for protesters are still in place under the new British Prime Minister, Andy Burnham. People who were accused of planning the disruption of the arms supplies to Israel were on trial for criminal damage and violent disorder, even though they never stepped foot in the Elbit Systems factory in Bristol. We're outside the Old Bailey in London, where eight defendants who were held in prison for up to 18 months on remand have faced an eight-week-long trial. We've just heard that the jury was unable to reach verdicts in the majority of charges facing the defendants in this trial.
Now, these seven defendants were not acquitted. The jury could not reach a decision, so there's a subtle difference there. Could not, would not, in light of terror sentencing being stuck on potentially after the fact, though, as we've already seen happen? Well, we can but ponder that one, can't we? An eighth defendant who can't be named for legal reasons was convicted of criminal damage by a 9-1 majority, however. So it's not like the government can plead miscarriage of justice here completely when they did get one out of eight, you can argue. I say can't. It's more can't with a straight face, of course, because the Crown can, of course, seek a retrial for the other sevens, and may well do so yet. But when that trial did deliver one conviction, people will, I'm sure, justifiably ask questions about any potential retrial and the value to the public purse of it, because clearly it did deliver a conviction. So it's not the sweeping result the prosecution was aiming for, nonetheless, was it? It's like being served one limp sausage from a full English breakfast with the waiter promising the bacon will arrive in about 8 weeks' time, assuming the kitchen's not caught fire or been turned into a police evidence locker. Now, the Filton action took place on the 6th of August 2024, you may well recall. Six people, as we know, broke into an Elbit Systems site near Bristol, part of Israel's largest arms manufacturer, as Elbit is, and they damaged more than a dozen drones, threw some red paint about. We know all of that by now, surely, don't we? Related trials have already led to convictions. In May, a jury found four direct action defendants guilty of criminal damage. One defendant was acquitted of GBH with intent, but convicted of a lesser GBH offence. And we know that a terror sentence got tacked on to that finding of criminal damage. So we know some of the people directly involved have already been convicted. The terror sentencing that followed appalled a nation, though, didn't it? Because they weren't tried for a terror offence. They were tried for criminal damage. Tacking a harsher sentence on because of Israel, as the optics very much lend themselves to, here has gone down about as well as a fart in a mini. Particular trial was about something broader, though, because the eight defendants in this case were not accused of entering the factory at all. The prosecution said they helped plan or support the action. Allegations included providing transport, arranging accommodation, and most nefariously of all, cooking food for activists. Yes, they cooked them dinner, allegedly. The fiends, how dare you feed these people? The path from making pasta to prison is now shorter than the line at Pizza Express, except you are far less likely to get a portion of garlic bread on the way in. The Crown used what's called joint enterprise liability, which meant it didn't have to prove these defendants personally entered Elbit sites or personally damaged a drone or anything else. It just had to prove they intentionally assisted or encouraged the criminal action carried out by others. Put simply, if one person breaks a window but another knowingly drove them there, knowingly, and then handed them the tools or waited to pick them up afterwards, the law can treat both as involved. The argument in this case was that the defendant's alleged support played that sort of role. A joint enterprise is a real part of criminal law. It can apply where several people share responsibility for an offence, even if they played very different roles. But the Crown still has to prove the role. It has to prove knowledge and intention, assistance. A lift is not automatically a conspiracy. A spare bed is not automatically a safe house. And unless the pasta was used to break down the factory gates, and I'm not bringing into question anybody's cookery here, preparing food is not automatically criminal damage. The jury had to look at each defendant, consider the evidence against them, decide whether the Crown had proved its case beyond reasonable doubt, and after 37 hours, it couldn't agree about seven of them. Now, legally, that reaction goes further than the verdict does. They've not won an acquittal. The case remains unresolved, therefore. Emotionally, though, quite understandable. Some of these defendants have spent months on remand. Their families have spent months waiting. Then they sat through an 8-week trial while the state tried to prove they shared responsibility for a factory raid they were not actually accused of ever attending. And the result shows how difficult it was for the state to widen responsibility to this seemingly ridiculous extent, seen blatantly as being done so for the benefit of a genocidal apartheid state whose factory it was, beyond those who were actually inside, or who went inside. Now, Labour has treated Palestine action as something needing a massive political, policing and prosecution response. They've gone mad over this. The group has been banned as a terror organisation. Supporting it became an offence under terrorism law as a result. Protesters holding signs were arrested and charged. We've seen it all happen. We've mocked and jeered a ridiculous government for going to such lengths, carrying off little grannies or wheeling off elderly people or disabled people in wheelchairs, all for the seeming benefit of Zionism. And of course, the official line they have stuck to like glue has been wonderfully simple, hasn't it? The law is clear. The law is clear. The ban exists. Support the group and expect to be arrested. All very decisive. Very much a minister behind a lectern, convinced that repeating it ad nauseam often enough is basically the same as solving it. And that's how Britain ended up treating pensioners holding placards as a national security emergency, isn't it? The terror grannies, armed with bifocals and sensible cardigans, all with a rogue sharpie thrown in for good measure. Remain calm, everyone. We've got this covered. The defendants heroically confiscated their bus pass. But behind all that stupidity is a real and massive legal problem. Because Labour's ban produced so many Section 13 prosecutions, the Terrorism Act offence of publicly displaying something that suggests support for a banned group as that is, that 1,579 cases were being handled through one review hearing, a single review hearing, at Westminster Magistrates Court. Now, that doesn't mean 1,579 defendants were all tried at the same time together. It does mean the number of prosecutions had grown so stupidly large that the courts needed a single mass review process to handle them. 1,579, all entering a justice system Labour itself says is already in crisis. The Crown Court backlog long predates the Palestine Action ban, of course. Tory cuts, court closures, legal aid destruction. Years of deliberate neglect had already left it in an absolute shambles. Palestine Action did not cause that. But Labour looked at a court system struggling with its existing cases, led at the time, as Labour was, by a former human rights lawyer who has at least been in a courtroom a time or two, you would imagine, even if he never quite got the hang of the human rights bit, maybe, and chose to add a huge new batch of politically charged terrorism prosecutions. Now it's Andy Burnham's problem, of course, and nothing's changed, has it? Ministers have been arguing that the crisis means Britain needs fewer jury trials, though. That's awfully convenient, too, isn't it? But a very convenient conclusion to arrive at after all of this. The government creates more cases. The cases need courts. The courts are overwhelmed, and already were. And somehow the part we are now expected to give up is the public's role in deciding guilt. Judgment by your peers, of course, always there as a pillar of our judicial system. Starmer evidently felt he knew better than ordinary people, and Burnham isn't exactly rocking the boat over it either. Not the fault of the failed policy, then, obviously. Not the decision to turn supporting signs into terrorism proceedings. Not the years of starving criminal justice of money and staff. No, apparently the extravagant part, the bit that's really causing the problem here, is 12 ordinary people, taken from amongst the general populace, being allowed to listen to the evidence and deciding innocence or guilt before the state goes ahead and puts somebody in prison.
Today's verdict highlights how the prolonged remand of Palestine action activists is a way of punishing people before they are able to face trial.
Family and friends who have been waiting alongside their loved ones for about 2 years now for an outcome and in the gallery for this 8-week-long trial have been celebrating here outside the Old Bailey.
That's what all the grand talk about court management leaves out, of course. People wait in prison too, don't they? Many of these Palestine Action defendants have spent far too long on remand already, all designed to be part of how hard Labour chose to punch down on them. How dare you try and stop Israel and its very genocidal tendencies? It's all very much how it came across, isn't it? Families wait outside for months, a year or more even. Lives are put on hold while the prosecution prepares its case and the system slowly, so slowly drags itself eventually towards a trial date. Then the trial finally happens and the jury can't agree. The months already spent on remand don't just disappear though, do they? There's no customer service desk at the Old Bailey handing out apology vouchers and a free coffee for your trouble, is there? And now these seven defendants could face another trial, of course. Another jury. Another stretch of uncertainty. Another chunk of court time in the system Labour says has reached breaking point. Perhaps the Crown will secure the convictions next time. Maybe it'll go for a best of three, I don't know. Perhaps it won't. Chances go up dramatically if there's no jury at all, though. The state can keep trying, but it can't pretend the first prosecution succeeded just because it still has the power to try again. And again and again, perhaps. And the longer this farce of a process goes on, the weaker they look.
I mean, it's obviously a huge victory that the jury has refused to convict. It's very difficult to describe the toll that this, on top of the 15 months in prison, has had on Yulia and all of the other defendants. It's just a disgusting abuse of state power.
16 months and then no verdict. 16 months. Not exactly a line on a case management spreadsheet here, is it? It's birthdays, it's Christmas, it's ordinary days with family, it's work, it's friends, it's relationships. Every normal, mundane little part of ordinary life taken away from you. That only actually seems mundane until the state takes it away from you. And in this case, what was it done for? What did they achieve? And Labour wants to tell us the problem with criminal justice is that juries take too long. Well, what was this jury supposed to do? This jury didn't keep them on remand for that length of time. They didn't keep the remand period so long and making it part of the punishment. What are they supposed to do? See Palestine Action on the folder and remember the government called it terrorism, so skip all the tedious business of actually looking at the evidence then. The judge might as well have wheeled in a giant red countdown clock and handed out some buzzers. 12 hours left. Please submit your Home Office approved answer before the buzzer or risk being sent to the gunge tank. Juries can be slow. They can be frustrating, I'm sure. Sometimes they reach conclusions you might not like. Sometimes they fail to reach any conclusion at all, but that's their remit. To take as long as they have to, that they need to be sure. Because unlike a government who can lock someone up for 16 months before trial, most of us wouldn't dream of doing that without satisfying us of their clear-cut and obvious criminal guilt, would we? That doesn't make them pointless at all, therefore, does it? It makes them independent, and that's what the real problem here is, isn't it? A jury is made up of people the government did not appoint, that the Crown does not employ, and that the Home Office cannot order to be persuaded, which is precisely why they matter so much. But the state has got the police, and it's got its investigators, and it has its prosecutors. It has lots and lots of public money at its disposal, and the entire machinery of government behind it too. The defendant has got their lawyer, they've got the evidence, and the requirement that guilt must be proved. Then a jury decides whether that has happened or not. At Filton, the Crown wanted to extend responsibility from those who actually entered the factory and did the damage to even more people, to the people accused of helping from the outside. With pasta. That may be a legitimate case to bring, but it also is a much harder case to prove, and to lose it is just as damaging reputationally to those that tried it on to such an extent. The jury was entitled to take its time over it. It was entitled to examine the evidence against each and every person. It was entitled not to manufacture certainty just because an 8-week trial had already used up a great deal of everybody's time. A long prosecution does not become a convincing prosecution through sheer strength of will.
Prosecutors use joint enterprise powers, which are normally reserved for gangland murders, to pursue the defendants, however tenuous their connection to the break-in. One of the defendants, Alex Herbich, was accused of making pasta for the protesters the night before the raid and paying £50 for a campsite where they stayed.
And that's where Labour's wider crackdown runs into the jury system, isn't it? The government can ban an organisation with a vote in Parliament. The police can arrest someone for expressing support for it. The prosecution can claim that people outside a factory shared responsibility for the damage inside. But a jury, they still get to ask the awkward question, have you actually proven it? Not suggested it, not implied it, not wrapped it up in lots of scary language and placed the Terrorism Act on the desk in front of you for dramatic emphasis. Proven it. And with seven defendants, this jury could not agree that the Crown had done so. And of course, the pressure around the Filton cases has also gone beyond the defendants who went inside to those outside now, to those literally defending them on top of that now as well. Rajiv Menon, KC, represented Charlotte Head in that earlier Filton trial concerning those who did go in. He now faces contempt proceedings over his closing speech in that case, with judges alleging he breached court directions and interfered with the proper administration of justice. Well, what on earth did he do? How could he have possibly done that? This chap's a KC. He knows his onions, surely. Tell the jury they had the right to acquit according to their conscience is all he actually did, which is their right, just because the judge had actually banned anyone from telling them that. Anyone might think this judge might not have been all that impartial, in which case you would imagine, but the consequences for this going against Menon don't bear thinking about for our judicial system either. Menon denies breaching the judge's orders. He denies improperly encouraging the jury to acquit according to conscience, because it literally is their right. The Court of Appeal ruled that the first procedure used to refer him for contempt over this, which came from that same judge, incidentally, was unlawful. Proceedings were then started through a different route, which he's also challenging, because this is how badly the UK government wants justice to be done, it seems, in Israel's interests. Why else humiliate themselves like this? Where else lies the logic, if not for Israel's sake? Menon says the case against him is already having a chilling effect on other defence lawyers, though.
So that's British MP Jeremy Corbyn when we were in London last week. As we wrap up, Rajiv Menon, if you can talk about how you're fighting the charges against you, the contempt of court charges, and also the chilling effect this has on how far lawyers will go to represent cases like these.
Absolutely. Well, let me deal with the latter first. I mean, there is no question, as the chair of the Criminal Bar Association and the chair of the Bar Council in this country have both publicly said, that the prosecution being brought against me for contempt of court is having a chilling effect on criminal defense lawyers and the worries that they undoubtedly have these days, particularly in protest cases, about what they can and cannot say. And that's obviously because of the unique, extraordinary, and unprecedented action being taken against me.
That should concern people no matter what they think about Palestine action. A defense lawyer's job is to defend their client, not politely assist the prosecution. Not trim their argument until it fits whatever the given political mood happens to be in Westminster that week. Their job is to defend them. If barristers start worrying that a forceful closing speech now could land them in proceedings themselves, the damage will not stay limited to Palestine action cases. It'll affect every unpopular defendant and every politically sensitive trial going forwards. Lawyers will just become more cautious. Defences will become less forceful. And the state, which already enters court with far greater resources than most defendants, obviously, well, they gain even more of an edge. That's the wider warning behind Filton. Palestine action is banned. People expressing support are pulled into terrorism proceedings. The Crown has tried to extend responsibility from people who entered a factory to alleged organisers outside it. Well, where does this end? A related defence lawyer now faces unprecedented contempt proceedings over what he said to a jury. And Labour is arguing that the court crisis requires fewer juries. You do not have to be waving a Palestine action banner to see the problem here. You only have to imagine being accused of something by a government very sure of its own sense of self-righteousness, and Keir Starmer's biggest failing was always that he could never take responsibility for anything ever going wrong. He was always right, and Burnham seems too happy to let these things continue. Governments are always certain when they introduce these powers. They promise the measures will be narrow, necessary, used only in the most serious circumstances. And then the category grows, doesn't it? And then the extraordinary ends up becoming routine. And before you can say Kafkaesque, Britain is handling 1,579 terrorism prosecutions over signs and slogans, while ministers complain that the real problem is how long it takes to convict the riffraff. It's not a court crisis Labour simply inherited. The rot began under the Tories, yes, but it's a court crisis Labour has far too eagerly poured for fuel all over, and then struck a match from a great big box that may as well have been made in a certain blue and white state. Labour wanted Palestine Action to show the power of prescription, arrest the supporters, prosecute the supposed organisers, widen the case, keep this conveyor belt moving. Instead, it's terrorism cases have stacked up inside a court system it says can't cope. And lawyers warn the pressure is reaching the defence itself, and its most visible, wider Filton prosecution has run straight into a jury that could not agree to convict. So if this conveyor belt of criminality is what we might refer to as our court system right now, then Filton is the wrench that's now jammed it, and Labour are the ones who dropped it into the already overloaded machine. How clumsy of them, with none of them seeming to have a clue how to actually get it running again. Seemingly now looking at another essential part of the system, our juries, and deciding rather than the wrench that they are the problem that needs removing instead. Well, it's bound to end well, isn't it? For more on the Filton trials on the Labour government screw-ups, you don't have to look too far for more. There's plenty here on the story just here as this recommended next watch. Please do also hit like, share and subscribe if you haven't done so already so as to ensure you don't miss out on all new daily content, as well as spreading the word and helping to support the channel at the same time, which is very much appreciated. Holding power to account for ordinary working class people, and I will hopefully catch you on the next one. Cheers, folks. Right, so Labour's crackdown on Palestine Action has just run into a jury-shaped obstacle at the Old Bailey. 8 weeks in court. You know what might help? If I actually had the microphone near me, wouldn't it? That would be a good start as well, wouldn't it, Biscuit? Yeah. Let's try that again. People might actually hear me this time. You're just going to sit there judging me, aren't you? Yeah, okay. Fair dues. No, yeah, you're disgusted. Okay. Okay, well, I'll do this one on my own then, shall I? Yeah, all right, got an itch. Yeah, okay, dirty toe beans, fair enough. Okay. Now, these seven defendants were not acquitted. The jury could not reach a decision, so subtle difference. Could not, would not, in light of terror sentencing being stuck on... Not the sweeping result of, or the music up again. Blew it. I suck.